we present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Swindon Evening Advertiser.
John Moncur was shown the red card for retaliation and has almost certainly ruled himself out for the rest of the season. I was very disappointed, said team boss Roland. All John had to do was to keep his nose clean. Instead, he's really blown it.
Well, thank you, Richard Cummings of Chiselden in Wiltshire, for passing that one on to us. Now let's meet the teams. No Richard or Alan this week, but in their stead, will you please welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween with comedian Tony Slattery. On my left, journalist and broadcaster Nick Clark with broadcaster and journalist Andrew Rawnsley. Before we start round one, here's a cutting from the Camping and Caravanning Club magazine sent to us by Mr. K.T. Bracey from Kendal in Cumbria.
The Insta-Loo is the world's first genuinely portable toilet. It folds to just 4 inches thick, yet opens up to full size in seconds with a real seat. Please allow up to 21 days for delivery. Let us know if it's urgent.
Francis, how nice to see you in the governor's seat, and you get the first question. Who had 35 billion reasons to see red in March?
If only Richard were here, I'm sure he would know the answer to all his questions. This is presumably something to do with the national debt, trade imbalance, I think, more likely,
right.
In fact.
Yes, yes.
Yes, Britain's trade disastrously in the red. Norman Lamont. Did you see there's a woman who died this week, a widow, who left £1,000 in her will to Norman Lamont because she felt so sorry for him. She'd never met him or anything, but she just thought it would help. So he now only needs £34,900,000.
So that's not going to be a problem, of course, because Norman's already told the Treasury to bung it on access.
Yes, I think you got it there. This was the government spending in March, which was higher than forecast, to the tune of £1.4 billion, which is being explained as a result of an economic statistical freak called Norman. Eyebrows were raised at the figures. In fact, Mr. Lamont's had to be treated for altitude sickness. Tony, welcome to the show, and your first question. Who moved to have Catholic tastes?
Ah, that was Miss Widdicombe, wasn't it? Who was splashed all over the papers for sort of swapping sides and becoming a left-footer, I think. I think she couldn't handle women in the Anglican faith, I think.
Oh.
The priests!
Yes.
Sorry, that's something
no,
too
no,
long
no,
time,
right?
I didn't
it's all right, we're used to all kinds of comments in this programme. You're absolutely right, it's the Catholic Church who in one week has had more successful conversions than Hull Kingston and Rovers. This follows the Church of England decision to ordain women priests. Latest prominent recruit was Social Security Minister Anne Widdicombe, who was converted at Westminster Cathedral and took the name Hugh. She was co-sponsored by Liberal Democrat David Alton and the British Incense Marketing Board. This followed many months of soul-searching and 2 evenings a week at Catholic night classes getting her A-level guilt certificate.
Can I say she was subsequently converted by Will Carling, which was... great.
Andrew, welcome to the programme again. Who is looking for an opening in the distant future thanks to a case of tunnel vision?
This is to do with the Channel Tunnel.
It is.
You know, with the size of the PSBR we were talking about, they could now build 10 Channel Tunnels. There'd be a light at each end of each one. Except they wouldn't, because, of course, they're having difficulty finishing even the one they've started on.
And now that on the signpost, Folkestone has been renamed the Eurotunnel, Folkestone is going to be late, is the true answer.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It's all about Eurotunnel boss Sir Alastair Morton, who claims construction firms are holding up the cross-channel folly to pressure him into paying them more. The tunnel should open next year, but only if firms end the go slow and go back to their normal work rate, the go quite slow. Nick, the first piece of music goes to you. you probably know that is music from the film The Godfather. And your question is, Nick, where was a new system of democracy offered and couldn't be refused?
I assume this is the Italians voting for a different system of government.
This was in Italy, where there's been even more news of alleged mafia connections of Mr. Andreotti. This was the man who was voted Prime Minister on 7 separate occasions, and that was just in 1 week. The referendum proved a majority of voters wished to change to a British style of democracy. You know the one, where a party which doesn't get most votes stays in power indefinitely.
Did you see that Sophia Loren is standing as mayor of Naples on an anti-corruption and general pro-law and order ticket, because she's only done a prison sentence for tax dodging, and that's regarded as clean in Italian politics.
That's compulsory!
Yes, well done. 80% of opponents to political corruption voted with their feet, while the other 20% couldn't get theirs out of the concrete blocks. And the scores at the end of the first round are, although the competitors are different, the traditions remain intact, because it's tied at 4-all. Well done, chaps. We start round two with an item from the Southern Evening Echo.
For sale, lawn aerator, 20 spikes, hardly any use, £18.
Well, thank you, Bill Donnelly of Rorton Swindon, for sending us that cutting. Francis, your question again. Who painted themselves into a corner after the writing was on the wall?
The function of Ingram's partner in this programme was always to know the answers, so Tony Slattery has a very good idea about this one. Painting, corner, writing,
it's not
wall.
To do with BBC graffiti.
It's the BBC drama series that they're setting on South London Council estate. Thank you. See, it always works. This drama series, they borrowed a South London Council estate, sprayed it with graffiti, and this encouraged all the teenagers on the council estate to do likewise. And the place is now a bit of a mess, and the BBC has been asked to clean it up and pay damages and mend its ways.
Yeah.
They smashed the place up. It was perfectly a nice council estate. Till the
yes, they just cleaned it up. I think the point of the story was that the council just cleaned up the estate and the BBC came in and smeared graffiti over everything.
But we won't mention the name John Burt in connection with
it. No. Nothing to do with him.
He's suffered enough.
He has suffered enough indeed. But more is yet to come, I fancy. However...
Not in my question, please.
No. It is about the BBC crew who angered tenants by daubing graffiti on a newly renovated council estate to make sure it looked run down for a police drama called Between the Lines. BBC designers based their vision of grim dereliction on an early El Dorado script. Tenants on the South East London estate became suspicious when BBC artists began daubing walls while singing Timey Kangaroo Down Sport and asking children, can you tell me what it is yet? Little bit of light, little bit of shade, you know what I mean? To make amends, the corporation organised a local graffiti competition with prizes going to the slogan Kilroy Silt was here and Bert is innocent. Well, that's got that out of the way. Right. Tony, your question now. Which unexpected callers were secure in the knowledge of a right royal blunder?
Ah, well, this is about security lapses at royal palaces, I think, where it's now got to the state where a 6'5" Jamaican man with a big bushy beard can pass himself off as the Queen Mother. And no one will notice. And it's just a constant stream of callers going in to ask Princess Margaret for 20 Kensitas and things like that.
But group four. All is well because group four are going out.
Of course.
I knew that chicken would come home to roost.
It's the news of two breaches of royal security. In the first case, a man broke into Princess Alexandra's private office and helped himself to a whiskey and a cigar. The second case featured a man who bluffed his way into Princess Margaret's front door by telling police he was a delivery boy from the local branch of Gin You Like. Am I allowed to say that? Yes, I suppose so. Andrew, will you listen to this? Can you tell us, Andrew, about the mop-top lops flop?
Well, this is about the fickleness of fame, really, isn't it? They had this auction of Beatles memorabilia, and nobody really wanted to buy it.
There was a guitar that John Lennon had once looked at, or they thought he had. And for some reason, it didn't inspire people.
Yes, I get extra points for saying that it was a double cutaway Rickenbacker?
Yes, you do. You get two more points for that.
My God, just for saying it, you get a bonus. It was the auction of the Beatles' memorabilia, though many of the items turned out to be not what they seemed. John's Rickenbacker guitar proved to be of a later vintage and by Fisher Price. While Paul McCartney's keyboard had only been played by one finger, and that turned out to be Linda's. However, let's move smartly on to Nick. Nick, your question is this. Who's looking after you by royal appointment? Would you like a clue?
I do know. I know the answer to this one.
You
this
do?
About, yes, I do. It's about... yes?
That's right.
Is that the one? It's about... Prince Charles has, interests at the same time of environmental friendliness and race relations, has appointed a Rasta shepherd.
That's right.
And the sheep are getting lost in his hair, or vice versa, I can't remember which. And he's called McLachlan, or something very un-Rasta-like and more Scottish, so it's very appropriate.
Yeah.
And he's getting a £1,500 grant from the Prince of Wales Trust.
Is he?
In order to, yes. You didn't know that, did you?
I didn't know that at all. It's all
bonus
news
points
to me. You're absolutely right in every particular. This is all about Julian McLachlan, the country's first Rastafarian shepherd. Although how you round up a herd of Rastafarians with a border collie is anybody's guess. Julian got a grant from the Prince's Trust to set up in business as a freelance shepherd. His £2,000 went on a wax jacket, a pair of shears, and several tons of extra strong coffee for the sheep counting season. Julian was wary of possible racist taunts in the area, but so far Prince Philip hasn't been near the place. Ever since he was a lad, Julian had wanted to work with a bunch of sheep and a big crook. But all he was ever offered in that line was at Robert Maxwell's Daily Mirror. The scores at the end of the second round are still tied at 8-8. We start round 3 with an item from Health and Safety Specifier.
Care establishments, nursing homes, hospitals, etc., all suffer from the same problem. How to deal with odours that emanate from urine, tea, coffee, milk, and other beverages.
Thank you, Steve Shuttler from Newcastle, Staffordshire, for sending us that snippet. Francis, your question again. Whose station will be absolutely fabulous?
I could have answered all the other questions last round, but yet again, my partner is going to help me. He's writing something. Oh, no, he's writing...
No, I'm not.
He's writing
I've written
his name.
In fact, on my pad.
It's to do with the...
It sounds as if it's a story about Joanna Lumley running a railway station. But it does.
You see,
she's probably got a broadcasting franchise. Has she to run a station? Lynn Franks. The advertising. The PR woman.
Right.
She's a Buddhist.
Yes.
PR woman.
Yes.
I don't know what I'm saying. This is all gibberish.
You're obviously getting spirit messages.
It's all coming back to me now. She was the inspiration for that series... Absolutely fabulous.
Absolutely right. In every particular, it's about Lynn Franks, the Buddhist fashion PR, who inspired the sitcom Absolutely Fabulous, as you so rightly say. Miss Franks is bidding to launch a radio station aimed at all like-minded women. So all you millionaire, sitcom-inspiring, fashion-freak female Buddhists, this is the station for you. The music for the professional 30-ish woman of the 90s is planned to be the 70s pop of their early teenage years, so their sophisticated taste will be met by heady blend classics from the Wombles, the Bay City Rollers, and St. Winifred's School Choir. Tony, here's your piece of music.
Money makes a go round, go round, go round. Money makes a go round upset. We both are sure on being poor. Money.
Well, that was, of course, money from the film Cabaret. And your question is, Tony, which squeaky pip decided to go for a million?
Ah, well, I think that's Philip Schofield, isn't it? Because that's the song his doorbell plays. Yes, he's just been poached by ITV for some fabulous sum. £1.5 million, I think, and all that money for putting his hand up the bottom of a puppet.
It's BBC Children's presenter Philip Schofield who is joining ITV in a deal which guarantees £1 million at a much later bedtime. The Schofield star of Going for a Packet said money was not the determining factor. That's the kind of comment you'd expect from a grown man who has just ended an intimate relationship with a cuddly toy called Gordon. The furry little rodent is currently on screen, starring as Bruce Forsyth's hare. Andrew, your question now. Which old burning issue was at stake for 30 shilling?
They burn witches, don't they, but...
Don't know about the
partner
witches.
Is scribbling something which purports to be a clue.
It may
He's
well be
scribbling
the
it very, very slowly.
This is inflation in witch burning in some chronicles that have just been discovered, but yes. I can't remember where they come from. 15 shillings it used to cost for a witch, and the chronicles announced that it was 30 bob, and the vicar concerned was extremely alarmed at the increase in cost of faggots. It's called a something protocol.
It is.
But I can't remember where it's from, and Tony's dying to tell me. Come on, Tony.
I'm not even...
The something protocol.
Is it the Selkirk protocol?
It is Selkirk protocol. Oh. Give him a bonus point for that. I'll work you a bonus later. Don't
Thank
worry,
you.
Nick. You won't be cheated. It's the publication of an ancient chronicle called the Selkirk Protocol, which has recently come to light. It highlights details of vagrant flogging, village idiot beating, and witch burning for 30 bob, sort of medieval Daily Express. But toned down a bit, the protocol was discovered in Selkirk, or as it's known on television, Selkirk Nil. What our faith. And included handy hints on witch burning, allowed 20 minutes per pound at regular 3. Nick, you were so good on that one. Here's your own question. Why will the Blackboard Jungle be a little quieter from now on?
Well, since Nick answered my question, I'm going to answer his question.
Right.
This is the latest marvellous instruction from teaching unions to their members in the classroom, which is that teachers may no longer shout at their children. They may, of course, say whatever they like about John Patton, but they may not shout at their children because there's the risk that they might be hauled into court and prosecuted for damaging their eardrums in the process, I suppose. I got it right this time, Nick.
It's looking pretty good to me, Andrew. I can feel a bonus coming up.
Very good. Yes, I think you deserve something with that brilliantly answered, if I may say. These were the guidelines issued by the Association of Teachers and Lecturers, which warned teachers not to shout at pupils for fear of prosecution for emotional abuse. Complaints have also arisen from kids who've been shouted at to separate them while fighting. The official action from now on is to wait 2 minutes before ringing a bell and then making them sit in the corner with a towel before having another go at each other.
What, Harry?
That's what that is all about, and the scores at the end of the third round have... changed the face of Britain, perhaps forever, because Nick and Andrew are 12, but Francis and Tony are in the lead now by one with 13. It was the Selkirk one that did it. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Croydon Post, which has been sent to us by Hetty Bramson of South London.
Large one-bedroom flat in need of redecorating, no chain, central location, a few hundred years from the station.
Francis, here's your piece of music.
Old Nick Bash Bang Wallop, what a picture, Blink, what a picture, what a photograph, poor old soul, blimey, what a joke, hat blown off in a cloud of smoke, clap, bam, stamp your feet, banging on the big beast drum. What a picture, rum-tiddy-um, bum-bum-bum-bum, stealing your family, album.
Well, that was, of course, Tommy Steele singing Flashbang Wallop. And your question is, Francis, what asset stripper hopes to be going, gone?
Well, Tony Slattery is yet again... Oh, no, he's writing his autograph. I'm sorry. He's...
it's very easy to lose your identity on this programme, I'm telling you.
Well, this is something to do with...
the question.
The European Bank?
Are we more in California?
You are
Europe?
More in California, yes.
Yes, now I forget her name, but she plays a very innocent schoolgirl in a soap, I believe it is.
Is this
Beverly
Sharon?
Hills.
Is this Sharon.
Sharon.
Yes.
In real life, she's not quite so innocent because she is apparently in negotiation with Playboy magazine, I believe it is, as to the cost of showing various parts of her body. I think she's auctioning herself at, what is it, $25,000 a nipple, $50,000 for the complete set.
Barry, why is Tony Slattery taking his jacket off?
Perhaps he's after an offer from our studio audience, I don't know.
I'll show myself to you for £1.50.
You drive a hard bargain. It's all about actress Shannon Doherty, who is offering to auction parts of her body to Playboy magazine, and in the process exhibit more flesh than Dewhurst's window. The actress, in the loosest sense of the word, started the bidding at $32,000 for a topless shot, as it gives a whole new meaning to the catalogue description, one of a pair, not to be broken up. Meanwhile, the magazine's editor claimed he admired her barefaced cheek. Tony, why is a chili dip the best medicine?
Oh, this is the latest scientific research, isn't it? That contrary to all the stuff about cold baths dampening the ardour of priapic public schoolboys. Am I making any sense at all?
Very good.
A cold bath is very good for you, and it gets the hormones and the testosterone flowing and sets you up for the day.
I thought it was going to be a Bill Wyman question, because when you said chili dip, because did you see that he met his new bride over a chili dog, it said, in his restaurant Sticky Fingers?
That sounds so
what
horrible.
Are you telling me?
That's what it said in the paper. It said
there was
he met his bride
news?
At his restaurant Sticky Fingers over a chili dog.
He married himself. He got so confused.
For the third time. He's the only one left.
Can I just add one small note, just in case it isn't in your notes there, that they are appealing for 5,000 volunteers to see if this theory is correct. Now, what they actually offer you for the tests is not yet clear, but I wish to sign up in advance, just in case.
Lady Thatcher's already volunteered.
No, but you need an electric current in those, don't you?
There have been 5,000 volunteers to put that through as well. However, we must not be carried away on wings of euphoria. These are the findings of Professor Vijay Kaka, that plunging into cold water can solve all sorts of problems, including boosting your circulation. So that's what Robert Maxwell was up to. Norman Lamont was encouraged to try it by John Major, but he didn't like the way John insisted on holding his head under the water. Tony, you had it right there. And we come to Andrew for your question now. Who's taking a mauling in the mall? Either of you?
We believe it's something to do with the fact that in order to reach Buckingham Palace and look through the railings at the changing of the guard, you have to be able to run 100 metres in 10.3 seconds. And some American grannies can't do it and don't make it.
It's almost as dangerous to go and look at the royal family as it is to marry into them.
The other problem with this is if you're not very nifty on your feet, the way that the royal family drive, you're almost certain to be crushed, but either by Princess Anne...
Prince Philip in that cab. Yes. Oh, get out of the bloody way, will you, mate?
It's all about the 15 million people a year who visit Buckingham Palace, and not all of them from the Marriage Guidance Council. Visitors are constrained behind rusty old barriers when they come to see the flag flying, which means the Queen is at home, or a couple of tea tails, which means the tumble dryer's broken down again. A report found the area to be a potential death trap for foreign tourists who are constantly harassed by speeding cars. The Duke of Edinburgh agreed that this often frightened sightseers and sent them running for cover, and that another good way to do this was to set the corgis onto them. Nick, who proved you shouldn't count your chickens before the big break?
I now know, having sat in the Alan Corran seat for 2 weeks and dressed in green to be like him, that at last I've got my due and just desserts. I've got the Group 4 question. Did you see, to answer the question briefly, because that's the less interesting part of it, is that Group 4 was supposed to be watching the Big Breakfast chicken coop. And unfortunately not written into their contract was avoiding those things with long furry tails and big teeth that come and eat them.
The F factor.
The F factor. Yes, indeed so, the F factor. And the three, one was called Alfred Hitch, and the other were called Lisa and something.
Another one was called Lucky.
Lucky.
They ended up as the big breakfast of some passing urban fox.
Indeed so. And I this is my chance. I've been dying to do it all evening to record what I didn't know until this week, which is that the Group 4 motto is Vigilamus Dum Dormitis, which means we watch while you sleep.
This was Group 4 Security, Honorary Life President Lord Lucan. Who managed to let three chickens belonging to Channel 4's Big Breakfast turn into the Big Lunch for a local fox. Group 4 explained from their headquarters, or as it's known to inmates, the Departure Lounge. And they didn't expect the fox to catch the chicken. After all, everyone else they look after seems to escape easily enough. We mustn't be too hard on Group 4, who have done their best to make sure that prisoners end up behind bars, usually serving beer to their mates on the Costa del Sol. What's more, they have won an award for their work from Amnesty International.
I don't think they've suffered enough yet.
I'm sure they will in the weeks to come. However, before we reveal the final scores, which are quite interesting, let's see what the cuttings the team have brought along. Francis?
From The Independent. According to an earlier report from the First Appellation Conference on Behavioural Neurodynamics, Walter Freeman has extended his earlier work on chaotic processing dynamics in the olfactory bulb of rabbits. His latest investigations concern intentionality in hedgehogs. He concludes that they do use semantic concepts, but their spatial processing patterns are dependent on sensory input. This follows experiments showing that they stop moving if you block up their nostrils.
The erudition there was not lost on our studio audience, I have to say. Tony, what have you brought for us?
This is a cutting from Quartet, which is a Suffolk parish newsletter. It's about churchyard tidiness. And it says, following the theme of tidiness, would everyone tending graves kindly take away with them all relative rubbish?
We're on song tonight. Andrew.
Those of us who write for newspapers do occasionally make mistakes, we have to admit it. This is a correction from the King's Lynn News, which tells its readers, we have been asked to point out that Miss Rebecca Green is not the girlfriend of Mr. Neil Williamson, nor is she the mother of his child, as we reported on Tuesday. She was not said in court to be on Mr. Williams's back, kicking and strangling him, as we reported. We apologise for any embarrassment caused.
Well done. And Nick, what have you brought us?
I brought you a small advertisement from an organisation called Magnet, and it is offering some wonders if you buy one of their new kitchens, because if you do so, you get this absolutely unbeatable and unmissable offer. Free worktops! Last 7 days.
Very good. Thank you very much indeed. And let's look at the final scores. Well, two are going to be disappointed and two are going to be happy. But you both lots have done awfully well. Francis and Tony have scored a very well-earned 15. But Nick and Andrew have won this week's competition with 17. Well played. He does deserve it, bless him. Anyway, before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Wellington Weekly News, sent to us by Arthur Parsons of Barnet in Hertfordshire.
The bridegroom's mother wore a two-piece purple and jade suit with purple accessories. The bride's mother wore a hat.
And with that, goodbye.
Part in the news quiz were Francis Wheen, Nick Clark, Tony Slattery and Andrew Rawnsley. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Louise Coates.